Good morning. This is Noel Clark, Mickey Smith from Doctor Who.
This is Neve McIntosh. I'm Madame Vastra from Doctor Who, and you are listening to
Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling. This is an extra scrolling. We are here at the Blue Box Cafe in Elgin to discuss Doctor Who Season 10, Episode 1, The Pilot. And I have put together a crack team of experts.
Wait, on crack, not crack.
A group of cracks who are here to explain all about Doctor Who. First, let me introduce Chris Mao, the owner of the Blue Box Cafe. Welcome to your cafe, Chris.
Thank you for welcoming me to my cafe. I appreciate that.
Thank you for coming in and being a part of this.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
And the coffee is wonderful.
I hope so. I try.
Thank you so much. And Deb Holfelder is here to explain all of the wonderful intricacies of this episode. Good morning, Deb.
Oh, I don't think you're going to get too many interests. I can't even talk now. It's too early.
We should get you some more coffee. Get some more coffee. It's wonderful. So let's start at the beginning. Let's talk about this thing that is Doctor Who. I have been a fan since the 1980s when WTTW put Doctor Who on the air here in the United States, and I love it. I love this show. This is what I do most of the time. Even if I'm at school, my classroom is decorated with Doctor Who. Tell me, Chris, tell me how much you enjoy Doctor Who here at the Blue Box Cafe.
I enjoy Doctor Who so much, I opened a Doctor Who themed coffee shop.
Yes,
so I mean,
did.
Well, I didn't know. I've been watching since the late 70s.
Okay.
A friend of mine just said, hey, there's this show on late on Sunday night on WTTW, like you were talking about. And I said, oh, okay. And I got hooked, and then got hooked on all the other shows that were before, you know, Fawlty Towers, all that stuff that was on before.
Dave Allen,
the Two Ronnies, all of that stuff. And then, you know, so I've been watching since Tom Baker was on. I think 78 was the first time I started watching. So it was kind of cool, and I've loved it since, and it's been almost 40 years, and it's cool.
Wow. Deb, what is your geek cred? Who are you, and why is Doctor Who a part of your life?
I started with the Fourth Doctor.
Okay.
And my children were raised on Doctor Who, and now my grandchildren are being raised on Doctor
Who.
Three generations of Whovians.
Yes, of Whovians.
So what is it about this show? Why is it that we love this show so much?
I think it's that ordinary people, ordinary everyday people, which are the companions in most aspects, get put into these extraordinary situations in space and time, and then there's this kooky guy running around that saves the day, and they all kind of go, oh my gosh. And then, you know, they build the companion up slowly each season to be somebody that's very influential. It happens, especially in New Who. It's happened with Amy Pond. It happened with Martha. It happened with Donna. Happened with Rose. It happened with Clara, even though Clara started out more being integral than that. And I'm sure it's going to happen with Bill, where they become more and more involved and shape where humankind kind of goes. And that's, to me, that's the neat part of it.
So you see yourself in the companions most of the time?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. How about you, Deb? What is it that keeps us coming back to Doctor Who?
One of the things I was thinking of was that I like the dry humor that's embedded in it because I like British humor, and that's there. A lot of it's tongue-in-cheek. I love how the companions grow into who they need to be for who.
Mm-hmm.
And being introduced this weekend to Bill, it took till the end of the episode till she really grew on me. But by the end of the episode, I really liked her character.
So let's start with Bill. We've now mentioned Bill twice. Bill is the new companion. All of the other companions have gone away. The Doctor travels with a companion most of the time. He really needs somebody to keep him kind of grounded to
Absolutely.
The Earth. It's almost always an Earthling.
Almost always. Well, yeah.
And Bill is the new companion. Can you give me the simple, why is this the right person at the right time to be a part of the show?
I think because he's been hiding.
The doctor has.
Yes, he's been hiding in plain sight.
For almost 70 years is what the episode tells us.
Yeah, 70 years.
He has taken a job as a professor at a university, and the rumor is that he's been there for 70 years since the last time we saw him. Now, the last time there was an episode of the show was last Christmas.
Right.
And before that was the Christmas before that. So it's been a long time since we've had a real episode of Doctor Who. And so we as the audience are seeing, well, where was he?
Right.
Where's he been? He's been teaching.
Well, I think one of the interesting things was watching the students in the gallery as he was teaching. And they were acting as though they understood what he was saying. But I highly doubt it.
What does he teach? What's the name of that class where the doctor stands up and gives a lecture?
I can't remember, but...
There wasn't one.
There wasn't one.
So,
and each time was a different lecture.
I think she did say that there was a class, but she says you never teach that.
Right.
I can't remember it, and I didn't even think of going back to look at it.
One of the lines was, well, I sat in on a physics lecture where you talked about poetry, and the doctor says, yeah, it's the same thing because of the rhymes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's great.
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic.
That is great writing. That is Stephen Moffat, the last season of Stephen Moffat writing for Doctor Who, or at least being the showrunner for Doctor Who. The last season of Peter Capaldi being the Doctor. We have a new companion. They kind of did a little hocus pocus on us here, and they're calling this The Pilot. The episode title was The Pilot. Like they're rebooting the show.
Yes.
A season before, they're really going to reboot the show. What did you think of this episode, Chris?
I loved it. I generally hate season premieres because I believe they always have to kind of reset the base of Doctor Who and say, oh, we have to explain what this is and what's going on. But they only really did that for like the first 25 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And then they still had like another 35, which was almost a regular show of actual show when it got into being interesting. Because I remember sitting here and, you know, we were cleaning up after, you know, we had a podcast before we showed it here at Blue Box. And I finally got to sit down and watch it. I'm like, oh, this is just them explaining who Bill is, which was fine. It was okay. But I'm like, not this again. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, there, the show's starting. And it did. And it was like, you could really tell it was like, we went from what does Bill do? How does Bill act? To now we've got a show. When she snuck down the stairs and saw them in the basement doing whatever they're doing.
With the,
and then it was like, oh, this is starting. And that was good.
There's a mystical vault in the basement that has Gallifreyan writing on it.
Yeah.
Very Stephen Moffat-y, that vault.
Yes, it was very Stephen Moffat-y. But I really enjoyed it. And I thought, obviously, for not having one for a long time, I think a lot of people were looking for an epic, like a 12 out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
This was a solid 8 or 9. I thought it was a really good episode. Really, like, going back to what you said about Bill, it really explained Bill really well, and I think really turned her from anybody that had negative viewpoints of her from that little snippet they had of the introduction, which a lot of people, I liked it, but a lot of people had negative thoughts of her. I think that turned a lot of them around to, oh, we're really going to like Bill and kind of put her where she should be. So
I think this was a good episode to introduce new people to, because coming into this, I don't feel you had to know a whole lot.
Sure.
To jump in with this.
I agree with you, but all of the little things, all of the fan servicey things that were in this episode were amazing. The picture of Susan on his desk in his office.
Well, and River Song and the Sonics.
And River Song.
A cup full of Sonic screwdrivers on his desk.
Yes.
Did it remind you of my desk at school?
A little.
All
just
of
a
my
little.
Cups full of
Don't
all
go in
of
the
my
back
because
I have one.
There you go. Your cup full of treasures.
I only have one Sonic screwdriver.
I have quite a few Sonic screwdrivers.
You can share.
Not to mention, forget about Sonic screwdrivers for a minute. Just think about all of my equipment that I have in my office at school. This doctor is real. He is a part of our world.
Yes.
And that set dressing, that fan servicey stuff, I think really was good.
Well, not even that. Throughout the entire episode were Easter eggs from all of New Who and even Old Who, not as many, but I mean, the New Who, there was stuff everywhere. Mm-hmm. Whether it was from like water, the nod to Water of Mars, I thought there was a nod to Curse of the Black Spot.
Uh-huh.
There were nods all over the place. There were a lot of nods to Matt Smith. There was just a lot out there, I thought, which was great to see because like you were saying, I think it was a great introduction to new people for Who, but also, like, if you've been watching, you got it, and you were rewarded.
I was smiling every time I saw one of those.
Yes. Including the Movellans, who were part of the show in 1979. It was a Tom Baker episode in 1979. Mm-hmm. They were only on one episode fighting the Daleks, and here they were fighting the Daleks again. Really fan service moment, I think.
Oh, sure.
I think they could have been just any alien race, and somebody said, bring back the Movellans.
Oh, yeah.
Let's throw them in there.
Stephen Moffat is, whether you hate him or like him, I personally really like the way he writes. I like his style. He really does pay service to the history of Doctor Who. Even though he does take some, I hate to say liberties, he changes it to fit his storytelling or to make his stories make sense, and I think that's good.
Yeah.
I think he also is very, very, very good at going back and saying, hey, this was in the original. We need to throw this in here to show it. And, you know, it shows that he cares. Just like Peter Capaldi does, where, you know, he's been a fan since he was young.
Right.
As we've seen on the internet all over the place where, you know, all that stuff when he was 12 and 13. That's great.
It's great stuff.
Yeah.
Season 10, we're here. We have arrived. It's been a long time since Season 9. We're on Season 10 now. We're going to see the end of an era with Stephen Moffat, the end of an era with Peter Capaldi. We have a new companion, Bill Potts. Her last name is Potts. We found that out very quickly in the in the beginning of this episode. What are your expectations for how this is going to go? We know that there's a little bit of a question mark about how it's going to end, and maybe when it's going to end. Those of you who have seen the trailer, there's a little bit of a spoiler in there. What's season 10 going to look like, Deb?
I'm wondering where Missy's going to fit in.
Ah, Missy is going to return. We know that we have the Master.
We saw a glimpse of her. We saw the Master. So it's like, when she first arrived on the scene, I was like, wait a minute, where'd she come from? And it took a while to figure that out. But I'm wondering how she's going to fit in and how Bill is going to respond to her, I don't want to say interference, but her interactions.
Because Missy and the Doctor certainly have a history.
Yes.
They do. They have
and
a, they
how
have
the companion will work into that that triangle is going to be interesting.
See, I don't think Bill is in love with the Doctor, which is a big change from
all
of the last female companions.
Because this is officially the first gay companion.
Yes.
She is officially not interested in men.
Right.
Which is certainly a
change.
She
still may have a fondness and a love for him, but I don't think she's in that mode. Not yet, at least.
And what they did that was very interesting in this episode was they gave her and the Doctor a full year, it seemed, to get to know each other before the adventure started.
Right.
Yes, the moments in time.
All of that time. As opposed to Rose, you know, the Doctor takes Rose's hands and run, and they're off, and the adventure is starting. They gave Bill time here to be fond of this man who is amazing.
Well, she was already kind of disposed towards him because she obviously sought him out to see his lectures. She was interested in that way. So she found him interesting or entertaining or whatever it was.
Some sort of curiosity.
Then they got to build
that,
and still she was unsure. And I love her take on the line with, I watch a lot of sci-fi movies, so I know what this, you know, I know what a mind erase is. I was like, I love that line. Yeah. So
that was a great line.
You're not very sci-fi, are you?
Yeah.
And he looks at her just with that look like, I'm pretty much the sci-fi.
Yes.
53 years of
I'm
sci-fi.
I'm one of the big three. That's what I am. So I'm not Star Wars. I'm not Star Trek. I'm Doctor Who. Okay.
The third one on the list. So,
but it will be interesting to see that. Plus, I mean, you're talking about Missy. They're also bringing back the John Sims version of the Master, and they're interacting.
Preview.
They're going to be in an episode together, so let alone those two. And I was sitting there going, if they could bring back Eric Roberts, that would be fantastic.
A three master episode?
Well, because it would be, you know, the three masters. That would be great.
That'd be a Masters tournament.
Right. Well, make it a couple of them are stuck in the Forbidden Zone.
That's right.
in that square.
Yes, that would be.
He refused to sign the contract.
We had a writer's strike. We're gonna punish you. We have footage we can use.
We have footage we can use whenever we want. We are the BBC. It will be great to see the two Masters interact. Mm-hmm. The speculation on what that storyline is going to be, taking into mind what Stephen Moffat has done to us for the last few years, what if Missy kills John Sim to have him regenerate
into her? Well, but he's already been killed like 7 times.
Yeah.
John Sim. John Sim died a lot.
The Kenny of Doctor Who.
Yes. He did. I mean, he was killed once and then brought back and just like resurrected and then killed again. So
as long as it's not a potion, as long as there's no potions involved.
The Sisters of Karn have a lot going on. So, I was just saying, and is Missy before John Sim or after John Sim?
And that's one thing that Doctor Who has not done enough, in my opinion, is this is a time travel show.
It's all wibbly wobbly, timey wimey.
Right.
They could go to any piece of anybody's life. Why not go to a different piece of a different character's life?
But they tend to not take Time Lords out of sync.
Right.
Time Lords almost always meet in their lives in sync. Almost always, and from my recollection. Mm-hmm. So they don't like go back. Now, River Song, who's half Time Lord, they do. And they're coming in reverse. But she's not a full Time Lord. But you never see that.
Special breed. She's not even half Time Lord. She was just born in the TARDIS.
Well, yeah.
She was conceived in the TARDIS.
She was conceived in the TARDIS.
Conceived in the TARDIS. But,
Right, but they say she's half Time Lord, so does that mean that... Because here's the theory. Are all Gallifreyans Time Lords?
No.
So does that mean you just have to be exposed to the time schism to become a Time Lord? So what does that mean? I don't know. Wow. So, I mean, can you create a Time Lord from a non-Gallifreyan? Does that mean a human or a Martian or a... Anybody could be a Time Lord. I don't know.
I'm all for that. I endorse this completely. I think that if you open a coffee shop that is Doctor Who based,
you can think of that.
Can automatically become one of the Time Lords.
Well, I'm just saying. I mean, you know, what's the canon? What is right and wrong about that? Because you know, everybody assumes, oh, well, all Gallifreyans are Time Lords. Well, obviously not.
Nah.
From interaction that they've had with Gallifreyans,
right?
Because there's been guards or people, you know, and especially in the Night of the Doctor. Right? What's the 50th? Is that night? I always get it mixed up. So which?
I never remember if it's day or night.
Nathan, what's the 50th? Is it day or night?
Day.
So the Day of the Doctor. They're just people that, you know, sweep the streets or whatever. Sorry.
Right.
I had to go to my walking encyclopedia of Doctor Who. So.
That's right. That was Night of the Doctor. We're talking Day of the Doctor. That's where we see all the farmers and the people who run Gallifrey, all the important people. And, oh, yeah, there's this group of people called the Time Lords, too. And they live over there, and they have fancy hats.
Yes, and weird and collars, clothes. But that's
weird
okay.
Weird collars, yes.
Right, the big collars.
And big robes.
All right, so episode one, the pilot, is about... another alien comes to Earth, and it's in true Stephen Moffat fashion. It's a scary thing that we see every day. It's a puddle.
Yes.
So now we're afraid of puddles, too. Thank you, Stephen Moffat.
Besides angel statues and other things. So.
Just about anything. Just about anything that you see on a daily basis, Stephen Moffat sees and goes, you know what? I could scare some children with this.
And adults, too.
So. And adults, too. So let's talk about acting first. Peter Capaldi, in my opinion, might be the best actor ever to play the Doctor. Do you think that his acting in the pilot episode was something to be admired?
I don't know if I've ever really thought of Peter Capaldi as my favorite Who actor.
Who's your favorite? Okay, so let's back up then. Who is your Doctor, Deb?
Besides Tom Baker?
No, you can say Tom Baker. Tom Baker can be your Doctor.
Having been introduced with Tom Baker, he's always stayed there in the back of my mind.
Uh-huh.
I glanced over and saw the scarf, and I had one. I made one and gave it away at some point. So I think maybe I just liked that era of Who at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I do agree Peter Capaldi does bring a whole different flavor to Doctor Who, and I see his acting style. Sometimes I'm surprised because I feel like he's gone out of the Who box, so to speak.
So to speak, yeah. The box that Doctor travels in, yes. The blue box.
That blue box, yes.
Who's your Doctor, Chris?
Well, my Doctor is definitely Tom Baker.
Okay.
I mean, he was the first. I mean, and there's always your first Doctor. I'm very partial to Matt Smith as the new Doctor. I mean, I love Capaldi. I thought Matt Smith just did a direction, but to kind of go back, you know, I think he was just fantastic in you know, obviously Moffat was there and they did those stories. But like to go back to your original question, I think David Tennant personally is a better actor than Peter Capaldi.
I think
Capaldi's fantastic. Yeah. I think you know, you look at what he's done since. I mean, David Tennant is unbelievable in what he's been in, I think.
I'll agree that I enjoy watching David Tennant doing his frenetic ways, mm-hmm. but boy, do the frenetic things that he does with his hands make me think, stop doing that.
Right.
If that was one of my students on stage, I would make them stop doing that after a few days because it's too much. Peter Capaldi, in my opinion, has that subtle, strong character, mm-hmm. and he can say funny things. He can do funny things. We've seen him do ridiculous things, maybe not as Doctor Who as much, but in mm-hmm. his other works, and he has that range, I think.
And maybe that's why I think the British sense of humor comes across better with Peter Capaldi.
Mm-hmm.
And then you add Nardole as the comic foil.
Yeah.
He's basically the Tin Dog in this first episode.
I was going to say he's curly, but
he is curly.
But I mean, not just because he's bald, but he is.
He's Matt Lucas, who is a comedian. You might know him from Little Britain.
Yeah.
That's where you might know him from. He is the comic relief in a lot of ways in this episode, and I'm not sure why he's there as a character.
Well,
is it a bridge?
Not in the first episode.
Well,
I'm thinking
a bridge because the character was... I remembered his character from before.
From the Husbands of River Song.
Yes.
Yeah.
So maybe it's just a visual... bridge for us to
I'm
going to
bet that
gap.
He is a that River made him promise to take care of him.
Okay.
Because Nardole's head was in the King's that robot body
with
Ramon, and then all of a sudden here's Nardole, and then he goes and brings Bill into the office, and a nut or a bolt falls out
of his elbow,
and he's
his
like creaking.
Yeah.
Yes. So I mean, is he a robot? Is he an android with his head? And he's keeping him around because he made a promise to River.
I thought that was explained in the Christmas episode where the doctor says that he got his head back from that robot and made him an android body. I think that was actually said out loud in the episode.
Maybe.
But either way, he's there.
I was too busy crying. Sorry. The last half of that show, I was like, oh, my God. So.
Yeah. When the bolt fell, I'm like, yes. Yeah.
Right. He's the comic figure. He's the mm-hmm. he's the Tin Dog in a way. He's not a companion.
And he does it. Even in the last Christmas special, The Return of Dr. Mysterio, he was able to explain what Peter Capaldi was kind of doing to everybody because he's running around like the crazy man.
Right.
And then he's like, well, this is why he's upset. This is why 24 years, and that part was a killer too. You know, her name's River Song and all that stuff. And even in here where, he's like, the bathroom's here, and he's like, yeah, it's down there. Don't go in there. I mean, which I thought was hilarious.
Yeah. The bathroom is now canon, and I am now going to use this line for the rest of my life when somebody asks me where the bathroom is. The bathroom is always, from now on, going to be down there, first right, second left, past the macaroon dispenser.
Yes.
that is now a part of my lifestyle.
I can hear that to your students when they ask.
Yes.
You'll have to.
Whenever there's a visitor in our school, that is going to be the answer to
where
the
bathroom
is.
Or right next door, but that's besides the point.
Down there, first right, second left, past the macaroon dispenser.
I always love when they bring those comments in about the TARDIS because you understand it could be infinitely large.
Right.
It is because it's all of these dimensions and they talk about it's by squash court number two. Remember, why do you need one?
Pool.
Then you need two. And, like in... was it Doctor's Wife where they burn rooms of the TARDIS?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, here's here and here's here. It's like all these ridiculous rooms that one guy doesn't need that never leaves the console room ever,
right.
And which they address in that. So it's kind of funny.
How about Bill Potts? What do you think about her acting so far in episode one? Did you approve of the new companion? Do you think that we've got a good one here? Are you ready for season 10 with this companion?
She grew on me as I watched the episode. At first, I was a little hesitant. I'm like, like always at a new season, you're a little hesitant about new characters. And I was curious, like, okay, who's Bill? Who's she going to be?
Mm-hmm.
What's she all about? And as the episode continued, and she became more of a person, I liked her. And I think she's going to evolve and be bigger than we think.
Oh. Chris, what's your opinion of Pearl Mackey as Bill Potts?
I liked her. I was kind of hesitant in that first little snippet they had because, you know, you just didn't see how she interacted over time. Like, you know, where is this kind of cocky attitude coming from, blah, blah, blah. And then in the episode, I think they almost did a 180. They may have thrown out a feeler. It's like, hey, do you like her this way? And then they changed her up a little bit, kind of like they did with Donna Noble, because in The Runaway Bride, Donna Noble had no redeeming factors whatsoever.
No.
Other than she was the victim of the circumstance, where as a companion, she was pretty fantastic because she was not really in love with the doctor, but she was a great opposite
to him. But she cared for him.
Yeah, she cared for him, and they were friends, and they were, you know, best mates, and they were all that stuff. So, you know, I think she's going to be good. I love her skepticism. I love her street toughness. I love her, like, I've been through the fires. I know this, whether it's because she just watched it in a movie or not and somebody made it up. But, you know, I think
she's
that's cool.
She's the sci-fi expert. Yeah. She's the comic book expert. She's us in a lot of ways, like the companion often is. Mm-hmm. But she pulls it off really well in a real subtle way, not in a over-the-top screaming, breaking my ankle while I'm running through the forest sort of way.
Yes.
I have high expectations for what we're going to see from her. The other actor that I want to talk about is Stephanie Hyam, who played Heather, which is the girl with the star in her eye. She, I could watch a show with her in it.
I
she
liked
did really
her.
Well.
I think she did too. And I think her interaction with Bill initially just was very magnetic to me. I think it seemed like a real interaction, real personal interaction, when they were drawn to each other.
Those scenes where they saw each other from across the room and they were drawn to each other were really great scenes.
Yeah.
And like Stephen Moffat is apt to do, they killed her immediately.
Yep. Just as you become interesting, we got to kill you. That's
part of it. It reminded me of Coupling, the episodes of Coupling that Stephen Moffat produced that was that same boy meets girl, the relationships, the attraction from across the room. I loved Coupling, and I loved those scenes, and then they killed her.
And then they're killed.
Well, even at the end where Bill had to make the decision, which was very Star Trek-y, and it's very, very kind of that first Star Trek movie-ish in its whole concept, was still, you know, I think that showed a lot from her. But she didn't make the decision because the doctor told her. She made the decision because she knew it was the right one to make, even though she regrets it, which you probably do in that, you know, especially in that budding love kind of thing. But it was interesting, and it was very intense. I thought it was a well acted between them. I mean, you really felt that.
That was probably one of my favorite scenes of the whole episode.
It was certainly something that kept me on the edge of the seat. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know how this was going to work.
I mean, would they have gotten rid of her after the first? I mean, imagine that. They bring on a new, you know, not that they haven't done that with one-off companions before, because Russell T. Davies did that whole year with David Tennant where you introduced, you know, all these people. But that would have been horrible.
Yeah, the whole time I was like, should she touch this water? Is this water dangerous? Waters of Mars style.
Right.
You know, is she is it okay that she's touching this girl?
Right.
Is this a part now of the storyline?
But was that water dripping off of her, was that Heather crying because she was sad? I mean, that's like in the beginning I thought, oh, this is water of Mars. This is dangerous.
Right.
Well, at the end and looking back, that actually is a pretty benign water. It's just a vehicle. It's just a vehicle to get them where they want to go.
And was it
her crying and being sad because I really like this person, now I need to go. I want to leave, and I said I would take her.
Right. This is what Doctor Who's all
about.
Yeah.
And Bill was having enough courage to let her go.
Right.
And the tears from her as well.
Sure. Oh yeah, and then the Narda line, he never sees you cry. It was just like, he never does. I mean, and that they go back to that with River Song. Mm-hmm. Don't let him see you get hurt. Don't let him see you age. You know, does that really, you know, is he just so focused and so big picture that he doesn't see the little stuff? But then he does notice all those, you know, does the doctor notice everything and then just exclude it, or does he not see it? Because he's pretty good at, I mean, he says he never forgets a face. So does he forget if somebody cries? I mean, that doesn't make sense to me. If somebody could have that kind of omnipresence,
right?
Does he forget that you do that, or does he just not care? Or is that just part of the deal?
Ignore it, or is he just not able or to emotionally be a part of it?
But he's cried. I mean,
right.
You know, that whole Matt Smith, when they found out about Trenzalore, the doctor was visibly shooken.
Right.
That was the first time I've ever seen him shook like that as a character. And then, not to sidetrack that, but so you know he's capable of having those feelings. Or does it, after being alone for so long and going through the heartbreak, does he just not care anymore? I don't know. Sorry to get that deep, but
that is some deep sci-fi.
This is what I think about during when I'm at work. I'm like, no. Well, because, I mean, the bad thing is, it's great, is we show all of these episodes. So I see these all the time, and so I notice all these little things that I never noticed. You know, after you've seen Impossible Astronaut the 50th time, you notice things. You're like, oh.
So let's get to the list of things that I noticed that Stephen Moffat may or may not be paying off later in this season. There are some characters in this first episode. There's a foster mother. Bill Potts lives with a foster mother who is calling her on the phone in one scene, and she's out with somebody called Neville.
Yes.
That we never meet and we never see. I think that's a Stephen Moffat payoff for later. And at that same time, the shower's running in the flat, and Bill says, "Barry, is that you?" And we never meet Barry either. So we've got some characters to meet later on in season 10. Do you watch Doctor Who with that Stephen Moffat filter now? Do you look for what the heck is this vault? What's the vault, Deb?
I try not to look at it through any particular lens. I like to just take it in fresh each time. If I rewatch it, when I rewatch episodes, that's a whole different viewpoint.
So how many times have you watched this episode?
Only twice.
Twice so far. Chris, you've only seen
it once, but a couple of clips on the internet.
Okay. So we have the Moffat Vault. I'm just going to call it the Moffat Vault. It might be the Pandorica. I don't know what it's going to be.
More like the Pandorica.
I like the Pandorica better.
Maybe there's somebody in there or something.
Yes.
Who's in there now?
Who has to touch it? Yes.
Could be Barry.
What if Barry turns out to be John Sims? That would be fantastic. I'm totally thinking that's what's going to happen.
I'm thinking about John Saxon.
John Saxon, yeah.
I'm thinking John Saxon, which was a tiny little two words said in one episode, and then 2 months later it paid off that it was the Master.
Right.
Yes.
Who's Barry?
How many episodes will we have to wait to meet him?
I don't know.
Her.
I think I'll watch all of them, so it really doesn't matter.
My understanding is that the Master is going to be in the triple episode, which is like 7, 8, 9, I believe. So it might be a while, but I don't know. I mean, maybe Missy will show up earlier and then they'll do, but you know, everybody talks about, ooh, there's going to be more double episodes. Mm-hmm. From my understanding, and I don't know this for a fact, is that there's actually going to have a triple. So it's going to be a double with one that leads, that sums it up. So I don't, you know how they do. He does that, but I don't know.
When that happens, I tend to just hoard the episodes and not watch till they're all there,
right?
And just binge.
It makes you mad.
So that brings us to another question. We have a whole new world of television nowadays, where Netflix has given us, here's a season of a TV show. We can watch as many episodes as we want. Doctor Who is still stuck in the old way of doing things, where we have to wait each week. We have a cliffhanger. What are we going to see next week?
How about year and a half?
And sometimes a year and a half, because this is a British TV show.
Yes,
and they just say, nah, we're not going to make any for a year and a half. Nah, it'll be fine. So
we're getting paid somewhere else. It's okay.
Right. They have other jobs because there's 16 actors in Britain. So
they're on two shows at a time.
Right.
Hey, wait. Broadchurch is filming.
We can't film.
Sherlock and Broadchurch are filming. We can't film anything else.
That's all we can do.
That's all we can do right now,
Harry Potter? No.
Nope.
And James Bond again? No, we can't do that.
No more James Bond right now. Oh.
Going forward, do you wish that Doctor Who was a Netflix kind of show that just dumped a whole story on you, or do you love the week-by-week adventure? Chris?
I love the spectacle of the week-to-week. Mm-hmm. I think, well, number one, it's great for my business, so I really enjoy it. But I like that. You know, like we were talking earlier about Mystery Science Theater 3000 just came out.
Oh, Mystery Science Theater 3000? That's a thing that I've been talking about for the last two months?
Just a little bit. Right. Just a little bit, Steve.
I haven't had a chance because I haven't had the time to do it. I know people who have watched all of it. Yeah. And I'm like, and you probably have watched it twice.
I've watched only half of it at this point.
Right.
But I've only seen half.
Slacker.
But that's only like 20 hours.
But I did Jessica Jones one night.
Yeah.
I did Jessica Jones one night. I did Sense 8 in one night. And that's great, but sometimes you need a little bit of time to digest and go back and see things, and there's things you miss. And with the Moffitt Vault, mm-hmm. you need a lot of time, I think, to look back, because there's things that we're talking about that I didn't think of, and then there's something that I brought up that you didn't know, and
right.
it kind of feeds itself, and then all of a sudden,
and all
the internet goes crazy. So,
and that's what Star Wars did with the Force Awakens. It mm-hmm. finally brought back that discussion where right. we had this discussion of what's going to happen, how are we going to do this, who is this person? Mm-hmm. Doctor Who does that whenever they're able sure. to get another group of actors like together.
Mystery Science Theater 3000 is a different beast. It is correct. Yeah. It is watching movies and being entertained by characters interacting with it. It's not like there is the depth of this, even though there is carryover and right. there is a common theme. It's not a show with a story arc. It's, hey, we're gonna watch this B sci-fi movie from 1952
right.
and make fun of, you know,
there's no Leslie Nielsen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of course, I could have binge watched yesterday. Doctor Who was on all day yesterday once the pilot was done.
Yeah.
It was on all day. Every time I turned on the television.
It's been on all weekend. They had a marathon
on BBC America all weekend. Yeah.
Which brings me to BritBox, which is the new streaming service that has collected all of the classic episodes. So you can get access to all of the classic episodes for $7 a month. I gave them $7 as soon as I possibly could because what? I want access to those yes. classic episodes so I can watch them whenever I want. Is that something that appeals to you?
Sounds like a retirement gift.
Oh, I think somebody might be retiring in 38 days.
Something like that, yes. yeah.
Not counting,
I might be able to find a way to put that into a nice greeting card for somebody. That's a good idea, Deb. Let me write that down. No, wait, I'm recording.
You're recording.
No worries.
We've got it.
Chris, are you
I'm in. Yes.
Yes.
Oh yeah. if only for Tom Baker, I'm in. Only for that. I hate to say it, if only for the key to time, if I had to pay $7 a month, I'm okay with that, and I would gladly put it on my screens and show that, because I just think that's, you know, if there's Doctor Who, I think that is it. Among other Pertwee ones, because I think Pertwee was great too. They're all great, but I mean that John Pertwee, Tom Baker era was, mm-hmm. you know, they actually started having a little bit of money. Mm-hmm. They got a little bit of acting. They got a little bit of history. They had a lot going on, and you know they had some great storytelling.
A lot of good storytelling.
Come on, you're gonna get Douglas Adams to write for you. I mean,
yeah.
that guy's a legend. And like, oh yeah, I'll write some episodes for you. It's like, okay, that's great. And,
yeah.
You know. I think that stuff speaks for itself. So,
let's rate this one episode, this pilot, the pilot, which is not a pilot,
right?
It's very confusing, Stephen.
It had another name, and I was trying to find it on the internet.
The girl with the star eye.
Yeah. Which would have been interesting enough to get me hooked, and then
right to watch it.
Yeah,
and then in Moffat style, we'll name it something that's. That, but
totally
not that.
Random.
But means something different. Yes. But means something different if you say it the right way. So what is your rating? Give me a scale and give me your rating of this episode versus every other episode of Doctor Who up until this point. Chris Mao.
I'll give it 8.5 out of 10.
8.5 out of 10. Deb Hofelder.
I would give it a 7 out of 10. I'm waiting for it to grow.
It is certainly a beginning. I feel like
it's a good solid beginning. Maybe a 7.5.
What a great story to bring out mm-hmm. for the Easter episode, that renewal season, that spring, that growing, that here's a seed and yes. we're going to make something out of this.
Yes.
Because he does that in every episode, even his ending, even his season finales, he lays seeds and plants eggs and hopes they take root. I mean, look what he did with all of his stuff. I mean, look what he did with Silence of the Library, how he took that double episode and made it literally the cornerstone of Matt Smith's entire run as a doctor.
Mm. I'm going to give this one 2 Daleks out of 10 Movellans, because the Daleks and the Movellans were both in this episode.
Yes, they
were. The Movellans didn't need to be there. They were on their way to a disco, and they stopped off and were battling the Daleks.
They were going to an Earth, Wind, and Fire concert, I think. Sorry. I saw them. I'm like, oh, my God. All I could think of is Don Cheadle.
Yeah.
Sorry. I looked at him. I'm like, yeah.
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 The Movellans are back, and they're Don Cheadle. Good. What is your scare rating on this one? Is this a scary episode of Doctor Who? I now can't walk by a puddle without wondering whether I should look into it or not. Where is this on your scare meter, Chris?
During the episode, I was a little disturbed by it, but uh-huh. afterwards, figuring out that they were pretty benevolent, it's okay. not scary. I mean, is it interesting? Is it kind of Harry Potter-like? Because is this thing going to be alive or dead or talk to you or not? But I wasn't scared by that. I mean, okay. at the end, you know, like you don't figure that she's not mad. She's upset or she's scared.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't scared like that.
So you're not going to walk by a puddle of motor oil.
Of engine oil, right. I love that.
It is space motor oil. And every time I see a puddle, I'm going to be wondering about it. What's yes. your scare meter on this one? How about the grandkids?
You know, the grandkids haven't seen it yet. They have to wait to come back over and rewatch it with me because they weren't around.
Okay, so is this an episode that you will show to the grandkids?
I would show them, absolutely. Knowing some of the things that they watch and as Star Warsy as uh-huh. they are, I don't think it'll faze them.
Okay.
As far as scare factor goes. And I came away the same with you. I looked at it as very, not malevolent at all.
Right.
And I think I'm still... I've never been the same since the Angels.
There's no doubt.
I cannot go anywhere, any gothic figure, uh-huh. any cemetery. I'm always glancing over my shoulder.
Thank you, Stephen Moffat.
One of the jokes here is, like, if I ask one of my kids to do something, they'll say, oh, I don't remember, because I'll say the silence got them. So, I mean, they do that. So, them in the silence, I mean, it's just like,
because you never remember if you saw them or not.
Which he cut the legs out from underneath, and I'm so mad about that.
Occasionally, my one daughter has shown up with marks on her skin from Magic Marker.
Yeah.
And I said, I see you've been watching Who again? What?
I haven't been watching Doctor Who. I deny that. I don't remember any of it.
Right.
As your phone rings and it's the theme from the show. Right. What? How did that get here?
As opposed to
that
Mr.
is
Science
my
Theater.
Theme on is her it? Phone for me.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah. I had the TARDIS, but my phone rings too much, I can't do it.
I had the TARDIS for my bell, for my ring, but no.
Yeah.
My notification is the cloister bell.
Ooh, nice. Ooh.
So nice. So it's always something frightening when I get a notification on my phone.
What? I always like the ending, the scene-changing music from Tom Baker's. That's like that really bad, dramatic, dun-dun. It's like, yes. It's horrible, but thank you, Terrence Dix. So.
All right. This has been wonderful. Thank you so much for coming, and thank you so much
thanks,
for having us
for
here
having
at the Blue Box Cafe.
Thank you.
Where can our listeners find more about you and this wonderful place that you have here in
Absolutely.
LD, Chris?
We can be found at www.thebluebox.cafe.com. That's our website, and social media is Blue Box Cafe or Blue Box Cafe 176.
And they can come down to Elgin, Chicago yes. Street here in Elgin. You're open all the time. You got great sandwiches,
thank
fantastic
you.
Salads. I love the coffee. I drank all of it.
Yes.
But I'll find some more. A phenomenal place.
Thank you.
If you are a Doctor Who fan that likes good food and good company, come down to the Blue Box Cafe in Elgin. Chris will treat you right. There's
we will.
No
and
doubt
we have Doctor
that.
Who going all the time.
And
so.
There's always Doctor Who on the TVs, even when there's podcasts interrupting
yes.
their lovely lunches. Sorry, everyone.
Yes.
Deb, how can our listeners find out more about you?
They can't. I'm all leaving right. the state. Yes. You can find me in Sparks, Nevada as of June.
There we go. Plans.
And we won't talk about the crack in the wall because did you notice it in yes. the first episode of Class?
Yes, the crack in the wall is in that first episode of Class.
Yes.
We're not going to do that panel right now.
But just
but yes,
bear
that
in mind.
First episode of Class was on this weekend,
I love
too.
The tie.
It's the BBC's answer to the WB.
Yes.
There you go.
Yes, Buffy the Vampire Doctor.
No.
Diaries.
No.
Buffy
Diary,
the Vampire Doctor Diaries.
Diary of Teen Wolf, yes. Arrow. I don't know what class is. All right. I want to thank my guest for joining us. I want to thank you for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Steve Fodor. We have a show every Tuesday, TooMuchScrolling.com. Send us an email, TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. Find us on iTunes and Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And every day of the week, you can go to our news site, News.TooMuchScrolling.com, and find all the information you need to survive another week. Thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling.
Of course.
We'll see you in the future.